from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Now, before we start the show, I just want to say that I have been eating more vegetables. And I've got to say that when you stopped eating shit and you start eating healthy again, your stomach actually starts feeling worse. So this is a weird thing. I'm eating healthy and I hate it.
This is the lesson that everybody learns when they decide they're going to have more vegetables. Like, they try to hit that food pyramid level of vegetable intake, and then they realize that with that comes diarrhea, as your body is like, what is this raw organic shit that's coming into my body that's just so easy to digest? It's not all processed and full of, like, the you can't say it's full of plastics, but that's what I always imagine.
Full of plastic
processed food when you put it in your mouth. I mean, when we eat stuff like, say, sour dinosaurs, those dinosaurs.
Oh yes, those delicious candies. Gelatin candies.
Yeah, to me, I always imagine those as practically, like, to our stomach, it's probably as hard to digest as, like, some kinds of plastics.
Yeah,
I imagine. I can't imagine those little long stegosauruses marching their way through my fucking intestines and the intestines having a great time on them.
Well, you know what? Next bonus show, I'm going to try to coax Carissa to come and talk about food, because she's been obsessed with it recently. She read a whole bunch of books, and she is now on, like, this quest to do something about it. So I want to talk to her about food, because I think everybody else is going to get a kick out of it, too. So that's for the next bonus show. Try to coax her into coming on board and doing that. If you guys are interested, let me know. You know, sometimes you gotta kind of push a little bit, you guys.
Here's a fucking diet for you. Ramadan. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not really a diet. That's fasting.
Well, same effect. Except holier.
Yeah, no, if the effect is to make people do silly things to prove you have control over them, then mission accomplished. That's what Ramadan is for me. It's like, don't eat. Why not? Shut up, that's why. Fucker.
I do like the fact that they get to have all these, like, as soon as the fasting is over, everybody gets together for, like, a party in the whole month. So it's a group of people together, angry and pissed off because they haven't eaten, then they get to celebrate together with food. Fucking the bringing to...
You know what that reminds me of? Reminds me of someone trying to hold their pee in because it feels so good when they finally piss. I'm like, that's not right. We should start a religion where you do that. You drink a shitload of beers, and then you have to wait and hold it as long as you can to reach ecstasy. But the problem is, when we do that, a whole bunch of people will actually have bladder infections and die. And then we'll be sued.
Well, how about just, like, no peeing or pooing until sundown?
Again, it would probably cause the same problem. You don't want anybody's bladder to burst or something, like, or rupture. It's probably bad. You know, urine all over your bloodstream.
Can you actually, like, hold it so long that shit explodes?
Well, it doesn't explode like as in,
like, a big
cartoon or something like that, right? But the shit can rupture. Yeah, it's a bag. It will rupture. I mean, I've heard horrible stories of, like, terrible parents telling their kids not to pee when they're in the car, and the kid holds it for so long that his bladder bursts and shit. It's awful.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyways, and also, before we start the show, I need to make a slight correction for last bonus show, if you don't mind me doing it. I mentioned something about Crohn's disease. And I don't know, I said something retarded. So a person came in and said, there's an evolutionary explanation to Crohn's disease, different from what I was proposing. I don't even remember what I proposed. I didn't listen to the show. But anyways, he says that some scientists think that autoimmune hyperactivity of the G bacteria called, I'm gonna fuck this up, Yersinia enterocolitica, that's as close as I'm going to get. It's argued that the overreaction to this thingy-majiggy I just said long ago was killing millions of people, and that there was a genetic advantage to having Crohn's disease, and that's why it survived. And as for colitis, it's apparently caused by some virus or maybe another environmental factor. So that's a correction for a fan who said that whatever I said last show, which I don't remember, was somewhat wrong.
Man, if we start every show talking about all the things in the last show we got wrong, it's going to tack on like an extra 10 minutes to every episode.
Yeah, but I think it's amusing. I like to point out my flaws. It makes for a better show at the beginning. All right, now get ready for the show. We're going to be talking about things that hopefully are accurate, but who knows? Today on the show, we're going to talk about Dominism, Dominism theology, and its recent iteration was called Seven Mountain Dominism. And we're going to talk about who's involved, including everyone's favorite presidential candidate. And we're also going to be talking about Sam Harris getting a lot of flack for, I don't know, being crazy enough to tell people that the rich should be taxed. And I also wanted to mention that I received a letter from a fan, which is our first topic of conversation, which is going to basically be talking about what we would consider to be positive proofs of God, like if such a proof could exist. So we're just going to fuck around with throwing back ideas back and forth of, are there any proofs? And if they did, what would they be like? And I'd also like to mention, by the way, that I got a couple of announcements. These are important announcements. The first one is anybody that loves James Randi is in for a treat. Apparently, we got a letter from Mark from Saskatoon. Do you remember Mark? We hung out with him at the Atheist Convention. Him and his friends from Saskatoon.
Oh, yeah. We were drinking at that bar.
That's right.
Good times.
Good times. Anyways, he sent me an email because he's organizing in Saskatoon an event at the Roxy Theater at 7 p.m. September 26th. James Randi is going to be there to give a talk. So if you always wanted to see him, I mean, now's the fucking time.
This is kind of the cool thing about the atheism scene, and it reminds me of back in the day when I was in the rave scene. And the cool thing about it was if you heard an artist and you liked that artist, you got $1,000, you could fucking fly him in and have him play a party that you organized.
Man, you almost did get Lab 4, and I used to love Lab 4, man. They were wicked.
Yeah, we almost got them, like, several times. Man. It's a little bit more difficult nowadays. Everybody is charging, like, 3,000 euros, and I don't know if you...
That's like 9 million Canadian dollars.
I don't know if you paid attention, but rave kind of died in, like, 1999, so... Anyways, but it's kind of cool how in the atheism scene, if you want to be a participant in that scene and you want to do some cool stuff, you can. If you fucking put some thought into it, you could put stuff together. That's pretty neat. A participatory culture is fucking wicked.
There's also... I guess he's on a tour, and he must be like... I don't know. He's burning the midnight oil because he's supposed to be at the Marriott in Toronto on the 27th. By the way, there's links to those events, the details in the notes. That's the lyrics section of your music stuff. So you can check out where that event is. I think I'll be putting a link up on the site too. Anyways, that's James Randi in town. The next thing I wanted to talk about is a young atheist that got in touch with me. And she said, her name is Lauren, she's a fan of the show, and she's also starting a new blog. It's called Generation Atheist, and this blog is pretty much for young, like really young atheists to just talk about their non-belief and, you know, share stories and experiences and so on and so forth. So if you are interested in that project, you'd like to participate, you're a young person, and... You know, her site seems like a pretty interesting project. You can email her at generation.atheist@gmail.com. Also, like I said before, there's a link to the show, to the site.
It's generationatheist.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
It was an interesting site. I kind of dig it, you know. So many new kids nowadays. Kids nowadays.
Oh, kids.
Here's what's wrong with the kids.
Oh, sure.
They're atheists.
Get off my lawn.
But they don't give a shit about it. It's like a non-factor to them. It's just like a, you know, a footnote. And they just go on with their life, and they don't really care about it. Now, these kids, we were lucky growing up.
Oh, yeah, so lucky.
We didn't have to deal with all the shit that all you people down in the States had to deal with your, you know, Christian friends and Christian communities and crazy mega churches and everything else like that. A lot of the people writing for this blogs for this blog are kids who were raised by crazy fundamentalists and the problems that they fucking went through and the realizations that they had. It's very interesting to hear this next generation talking about the effect of fundamental Christianity on their development as human beings and how, like, certain fucking concepts would twist their minds up. A lot of stuff about sex and how the sex stuff was completely contrary to everything that modern society is basically... Because modern society is telling everybody to slut it up, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is like the big tug of war. While Christianity is really trying to push you back into that purity box, don't fucking spread your legs for nobody!
Until marriage! And the average person getting married in like mid-20s or late-20s. Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
That sounds completely healthy. And don't masturbate either.
Oh, no. You'll go blind and...
Don't fucking masturbate.
You know who was behind that whole don't masturbate shit, too? It's a pretty recent thing. It really, it harkens back to the Dr. Kellogg and his fucking crazy-ass health regimen of yogurt enemas and a fucking no-masturbation policy, man. When you eat cornflakes, you're eating something from a madman. Nah. I mean, you know what cornflakes is? It's moldy dough that you fry. That's the invention of a madman.
Yeah, Dr. Kellogg was a bit crazy.
He was very crazy.
Even before that, I mean, throughout history, there was all these, like, don't touch your penis, it'll make you go blind things. I remember some French artwork from, like, just a bit past the Middle Ages where it has this kid that's La garçon, il touche sa pénis, il fait mort.
Il est mauvais.
It, like, shows, like, the six-year thing.
Oh,
six-year
I saw that,
cycle of,
yeah.
of a it's masturbating youth, and it shows, like, his scales.
Degradation.
His skull starts to cave in. His brain starts leaking out of his nose. He defecates himself.
Yeah, that's your wonderful 18th century medicine right there. It's like the same medicine that brought you, oh, no, this woman is suffering from hysteria. Though, come into my office and I'll manually masturbate you.
Imagine how terrifying. Yeah, they're making a movie about all that, eh?
Really?
Yeah, about the invention of the vibrator and, like, the guys in Britain that
were. It predates the fucking vacuum cleaner as a fucking. As an object for sale in magazines.
Yeah, but you know, I kind of figure that we were less concerned about putting kind of electric contraption up against women's vaginas than we were, like, you know, running it, making a device that would then perhaps ruin our expensive rugs.
Really? Is that much of a concern? I just wish I was a doctor back then. I think it'd be fucking rocking.
I don't know, man. It's kind of like people who say, "Oh, I want to be a gynecologist." Yeah, a gynecologist, and you don't want to know like 90% of the women that you're going to have to deal with, especially the ones who are there because they have problems. I can't even imagine the long list.
The unhealthy vaginas you're going to see your whole fucking life. That's going to scar you.
The crazy liquid smells.
Maybe it just makes you appreciate a beautiful vagina all that more, though.
You'll never be able to eat, like, soup or creme de or anything else, like, again.
I think you just kind of, it just washes over you at that point. I think they work it out of you. For you, the vagina is either some science-y mystery land of fun, which is why you're in this game to begin with, or else you just thought you wanted to see some pussy, and now you're living in hell, pal. You're living in hell. Okay, let's move on to the first topic. The impetus to talk about this actually came from a fan who had just become a hardcore member. So, what can I say? I
was you pander.
I fucking pander. You bet your ass I fucking pander.
You know, people don't even have to buy the memberships and we'll still pander to you.
Don't say that, though.
Sorry.
Okay, so he says, greetings from the UK. Well, the crappy part of the UK. Been catching up on the podcast via iTunes and he's up to 122. I'm like, man, you are behind.
He'll hear this in 3 years.
He will hear this in 3 years. And he was so impressed, decided to splurge on a hardcore membership. He says, anyways, I have a question. I realize that as a TGA noob, I may have missed you discuss this already. Which, number one, guys, don't worry about asking me questions that we've already asked. I don't even remember answering them. It's all good.
We're completely different people. How many years before all of our cells change?
Completely
new people.
After 9 years, every single cell in your body, after 9 years, has been replenished. You are not the same man in every sense, literally, than you were 9 years ago.
I'm sure there's still some hot dogs rattling around in my colon, though.
Nope, I checked it. 9 years.
Yeah.
I know. It's for the book I'm writing, actually. I talk about it as a... an important way to understand how you say goodbye to people that you won't see for a very long time. Because if you see anybody if you haven't seen anyone for longer than 9 years, both of you are not the same organisms you knew. No part of you is.
You must kill them.
They are evil clones. I'm not saying that, though. Okay, basically, I'd like to know what evidence you think you would require to be convinced of the existence of God. First of all, he's like anybody else that writes in. They obviously have their opinions and so on and so forth. We'll skip his opinions, not to be disrespectful, but only because the letter's so damn long.
Yeah, and even though you're better at reading stuff than you used to be, it was like a couple of paragraphs.
It's too long.
There's a couple of bits on the terminology that we might want to talk about before answering this. Let's break this down. Convinced is a very strong word, because to convince me of something, it would have to be pretty major, probably more major than a god who's kind of hiding in the background would be willing to offer. But truth be told, if there was some kind of... Because, you know, in the field of quantum physics, there's all sorts of crazy shit going around, a whole bunch of theories. My mind is open about that kind of stuff, and there's some pretty whacked out shit.
Some very whacked out shit.
I mean, multiverse stuff, like infinite dimensions where every action creates a new split. And I'm like, I don't know about that, but know, my mind is open to it because, hey, the math theoretically may work out or something like that. So I keep my mind open. I would keep my mind open towards the concept of God if in any kind of way, shape, or form he had ever fit into any scientific experiment that we had ever done. The only time he ever fits into it really is when people fuck up the experiment, have no answer, and then just fall back on, guess God did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you were mentioning, actually, quantum mechanics, and it's interesting that you focused on the math, because there's a story I just love, which is about Paul Dirac, who's trying to come up with an equation to essentially calculate the... the equation itself, he predicted antimatter from just the math. And I feel like, to some degree, when you know, you mentioned yourself, like, the math work, and it seems to be the truth, you know? When I look at objective reality... I want something kind of similar to that, where you were able to make a prediction based on the raw logic of math to come up with something that is still real. The math predicted it. Now, with that said, this is how I formulate what I would say a well-constructed but still open to other realities kind of frame of mind, right? I'm not 100% convinced that we've figured it out. I am not satisfied with the asymmetry of the universe. Why is there more matter than antimatter, dude? I've been digging into this question for fucking ever. I want an answer for my book, and I can't find one, man. I just can't find one.
Call a professor.
No, I did call a professor. You see, the whole thing about the asymmetry of the universe is it's one of those, well, you know, it seems to make sense, and it works out. But, you know, I have questions like, is it possible that all the antimatter is just somewhere else, like, waiting to annihilate us? Like, what the hell? Like, we don't know. The question is, the truth is we don't know. We may come closer to an explanation once we really start finding, doing some pretty fucking crazy science. Like, they've isolated antimatter for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes! Oh my, it's like Star Trek! It's crazy!
Anytime that you fucking complain about the world not paying enough attention to science and not putting enough resources into science, I gotta say, well, look, they built the Hadron Collider. That's pretty wicked.
Yeah, but Europe built it. And you know what? The U.S. was supposed to have that particle accelerator way before anybody else, but they pulled the plug when there was $2 billion left to invest in it. America said no to science a long time ago. Europe picked up the fucking... the pieces of that shit, and now they're doing the great goddamn science. And you're like, you know what, America? There's going to be no more elements named after you. The discoveries are all going to be by others. Ta-da!
All of the new useless radioactive elements will be named after Chinese people.
Yeah. And for the cost of what? Two stealth bombers that you wouldn't have built. Congratulations, guys. You really know how to spend your money.
I seem to remember there was like an infographic, and God bless infographics. I love them. Like, the internet is full
of beautiful.
Them. Talking about, you know, how much military equivalences it took to equal the budget for NASA. And it was hilarious. It was like just a handful of drones, or this many of this, or this many days in Afghanistan. It's very unfortunate. Very, very unfortunate.
When you realize that for the cost of the war in Iraq, they could have actually sent someone to Mars.
Well, I mean, here's my opinion on what happened to NASA, is they turned into pussies. They weren't bold enough. They stopped risking everybody's lives on crazy fucking missions.
Yeah, but I can understand why they did. When I was reading that book again, Packing for Mars, one of the things you realize is because it's run like a government institution, they're always having to play that game, right? Because Congress is always one fucking step away from saying no. And when you fuck up, I mean, they did fuck up. It happens. Remember that time where they sent that Mars lander and they confused feet with meters and it fucking crashed?
What about the time they cooked all those guys on the launch pad, or the time the fucking Challenger exploded?
Right. Space is fucking dangerous. I still can't believe that people are take for granted the fact that we strap people to explosive rockets and we're like, yeah, that's normal. That's normal. What? A couple of them die when it exploded? And you know what? Here's what's really fucked up. They didn't die right away. Actually, like, I was reading an article about trying to develop parachutes and emergency systems that could work at 40 G's. That's so many G's. You can only withstand 40 G's for probably a fraction of a second. After that, you're dead.
Yeah,
you're quite dead. 4 G's is probably the max that you can withstand.
All of the blood would just go pool up in your head, get so dense.
It could either get all the way to your head and get really dense, or all the way out of your head and it just get really bad.
You just out your butt.
out everywhere. Just horrible. Just horrible. Okay, so let's go back to talking about proofs that are necessary. I liked PZ Myers had a pretty good way to describe this. He said that imagine you had a giant 900-foot Jesus with laser beams coming out of his head, and he landed on Earth and he was fucking destroying everything, because I guess that's what they hope for, right? That's the wish.
That's the Revelation Jesus.
Yeah, that's Revelation Jesus. Now, even that impressive-sounding monster is pretty pitiful in the grand scheme of things, right? Like, oh, bearded, sandal-wearing 900-foot monster is a god? Like, that's proof of probably some powers much more fantastic than us, but is it proof of a creator of the universe god? Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, I go back to that Star Trek The Next Generation episode where that hot bitch came down to the planet to fulfill prophecy,
oh,
and Picard was
the
like,
devil
"You're not, you're not God." She just turned out to be some trickster,
some bitch,
yep.
with a lot of tricks up her sleeves. Does that sound familiar? Sounds like a lot of people I know.
Well, I always wondered how quickly, when shit hits the fan, how quickly we're going to turn back to superstition and everything else. That was one of the reasons, I think I've mentioned this before, why I like that movie, The Fog, where shit goes wrong and instantly they start sacrificing people in the grocery store.
Well, it wasn't instantly. Here's what I liked about the movie. There was a clear distinction that happened at the beginning, right? The crazy religious lady, and at first everyone's like, yeah, right. And then something freakish happens where she doesn't get killed because she's praying / wishing, and then everyone believes her. So if you have, say, 1,000 crazy people, and they all do something completely nuts, but one of them survives that nutty experience, he comes back, he's got a fucking special, unique power. Now everyone's going to be like, oh my goodness, something unusual happened to him. Oh, he's our new god. We're that easily impressed. That's how pathetic it is. It depresses me. You know what actually it reminds me of a little bit? I don't know if I want to go too much on this tangent, but it did remind me of what Sam Harris was talking about when he said that one of the biggest predictors of violence in society is inequity, right? Where there's so much disparity between one group and another, and that kind of makes people go a little bit nuts,
yeah.
Right? And I think that's what we're always on that edge of just pretty much being nuts. I think we all recognize that to some degree, right? When you're like, the fabric of society is some, hinges, it could collapse, and we all we joke about it, ha ha ha, but, we know it's true. We know that given the illusion that society no longer functions the way that it used to, even though nothing has fundamentally changed, your brain will change. Something bad's gonna happen. You'd just be like, I'm gonna go in crazy monkey mode, and that's the only mode you know. So, I feel to some degree like we don't actually recognize that part of ourselves. We're in denial. I think even as atheists, we're like, oh no, I'm super rational. I make all kinds of rational decisions.
Oh, it's like those people who say, I will never cheat on my girlfriend, and then some fucking hot bimbo corners you, jumps you, and you're like, I don't even know what happened.
Yeah, what happened? Well, number one is you thought you were better than everyone else. That was your first mistake. You thought that you had some fucking power that nobody else does because I'm a rationalist, therefore all the decisions I make are rational. No. Here's a simple example, actually. I was thinking about this the other day. I was pretty peeved yesterday. I was just mad. And I'm the kind of person that there's very few individuals that ever really seen me yell and scream. Like, it doesn't happen very often. Carissa's never seen me do it. She has a special word for my yelling, which is basically when I raise my voice, because I have a really powerful voice. But it's not me yelling, it's just me raising my voice. But what I've noticed that I do is if I'm angry or mad at someone, I release my anger in very tiny doses, like almost like...
So you snipe at people
long. I snipe, I don't even realize that it's happening, right? I think that I'm cool and collected, but really
you
my emotions just...
You go back to high
just,
school, Jake, who's just a dick to everybody.
Just a dick to everybody. And it reminds me, I know that everybody is probably tired of these kinds of analogies, but it reminds me of a Star Trek episode with fucking Spock's dad. Do you remember that episode with Spock's dad and he has all these emotions and everybody else is sort of feeling them, right?
Oh, yeah, where he keeps on having, like, basically it's kind of like premature ejaculations of emotions in front of Picard. And he's like, so shame!
Okay, you remember that. Anyways, I think it's kind of like that for ourselves, but we don't know it. We think ourselves being cool, calm, controlled, but we don't know that unconsciously we're doing all kinds of things, like we're being snipey or passive-aggressive or dismissive or all these other things that we don't realize we're doing because we think to ourselves, I'm really calm and collected. No, maybe it's even better for you to just have yelled once than be spared, like, the whole day worth of undermining people's confidences. It's going to come out one way or another, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. And, I you know, like, to tie it back to, you know, how easy it is for people to believe or how easy it is for people to get superstitious, like what you were saying in the frog, right?
For people to just be kind of irrational and not realize what they're doing.
Right. Well, that goes back to the whole point that you don't really need evidence to believe. That's, like, the most important thing. I mean, you disbelieve because of evidence, right? That's just where it points. But not everyone makes their decisions based on evidence. Most of us make decisions based on emotions, all right? We think they're evidence because we've somehow justified them. We've found a way to rationalize our emotions. Like, I made this totally selfish purchase for the right reasons. Nope. Justification. We're so good at that, we don't even catch ourselves doing it. So it's the same with belief, right? So as far as a person is concerned, they think that what they believe is evidence. But in reality, what they have is a strong emotional connection walled up by justification all around them, choosing the kind of evidence they want to see. Like, there's a historical evidence for Jesus. No, there isn't. Like, get over yourself. There really isn't. It's like, the Bible is a historical document. Good God, no.
What I find funny is once again, if you go back to, like, what is it going to take for you to believe? I think even now today, there's a lot of people out there who say they believe in God who don't really believe in God. When push comes to shove, they probably don't. And that manifests itself in a lot of different ways. Like, we always make that joke, okay, if you're super religious, just blow yourself away so you can go to heaven. Oh, well, I can't because that... We closed that loophole by saying God doesn't
exactly.
like that.
Well, you have to have fucking... you have to close those loopholes.
But you try to find people who are fucking fearless in life because they really believe in God. They are few and far between. It's like people who read the astrology section of the newspaper, but if you put them to the test, they might not go through this whole, like, oh yeah, it's
I'm gonna meet
happen.
A guy
it's,
today.
It's gonna be exactly like that. There's levels of belief. There's a lot of people out there who just walk around saying that they believe in God, but when push comes to shove, or when they really have to think about it, this is why atheism is kind of cool and effective in some ways, and why, you know, it's not all that great trying to convert, like, the super hardcore, but there's so many casual people out there, you could totally ruin their day by shattering their belief of God. Like throwing a rock through a window, just walking by,
like, oh, I just shattered his belief. Well, it's the problem is that oftentimes what happens when you do that, there are studies to suggest that when you I think it was Michael Shermer who wrote about that if you do shatter someone's belief, that they'll come back and believe even more firmly than they did before because they chose to erect even stronger walls of justification, you know? It's kind of like when those Jehovah Witnesses came to the house, and after I'd sent one of them away saying, can you explain to me why there are two different and contradictory stories about what happened to Judas after he betrayed Jesus? Very different. One in which he kills himself, and the other one in which he gets disemboweled by God. Those are very fucking different endings for him. So he left, came back later, and their explanation was that he had hung himself near the edge of a cliff. The branch had broken and disemboweled him under sharp rocks. And I was just stunned. I wasn't stunned by its stupidity only. I was stunned by telling him, listen, you understand, obviously, of any people, you should understand that the stories within this are allegory, right? That there's a lesson to be learned here, and maybe once in a while, a story is so important that you have to say it two different ways to try to explain two different lessons. It's supposed to convey reality, and when you try to make it fit, you take away anything of value. Now there's no lesson to be learned. Just don't kill yourself near the edge of a cliff, I guess, otherwise you'll leave a mess. That's the story of that allegory. Boo! You know, just, I think that when people try to justify in that way, they'll probably end up cheapening their belief. And this is where I probably disagree with Shermer. I'm like, yeah, sure, they'll have a stronger, they'll believe more strongly, but the ideas that form this wall around them is fucking papier-mâché, man. It's the thinnest. Mm. It may be really erected tall, but it's fucking weak as shit. You just push it over and it falls. Trust me. You just had to push hard enough. I'm not going to tell you how hard that is, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't let me do that. Okay, let's talk about something that you wanted to mention. It was an article that Sam Harris wrote. Well, two articles that he wrote.
Let's actually just stop and talk about Sam Harris in detail a little bit. It seems to me like he's been kind of burning it up on the blogosphere, making some controversial comments. You were saying something about how there was a kerfuffle about him saying something about unatheists or how...
Well, I didn't say it was a kerfuffle. I just said that he had... Well, he's said this multiple times, but he's been reiterating it, that the title atheist is eventually going to be...
obsolete.
Obsolete. Like, it's like saying that you're a non-astrology believer. And... While, I mean, you know, I don't know if I necessarily agree with him, because it would, you know, a person could have said the same thing perhaps of agnosticism or any isms. You're like, isms are really hard to go away. They don't just go away overnight, especially when we are so reviled. I'm like, it's neat that you think that, but it doesn't really make any sense in the here and now. You know, it's like, are you predicting the far future when we're all wearing plastic bags and our heads are shaved and we all have the same number?
Like the future from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Exactly.
Where everyone is excellent to each other.
Right. Well, you know, it's the Wild Stallions and their amazing music that created peace.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting that Sam, ever since he put out that Moral Landscape book, he's been talking a lot about his... It seems like he's trying to create this new... Now, I don't even know if I want to call it an ism, but he's got like this philosophical concept of what... of saying that, you know, science can determine what good and evil is, and he's trying to apply that across all these different spectrums. And recently... And his general theory is that it's kind of a modification of what's good for all or what causes the least amount of suffering, kind of move towards that. There are inherently more evil acts than and inherently more good acts based on the net positive or net negative effects that they may have. And it seems like he's been trying to kind of tie that in with all of the blog stuff that he's been writing. And he wrote an article, you know, talking about wealth inequality, which is obviously becoming a bigger and bigger story as the wealthy who basically control everything and set up the laws and stack the deck get richer and richer. And they're literally... Because think about this. Where is the money coming from? It's being sucked out of the regular economy.
Well, think about the 2008 financial crisis, right? The reason it was a financial crisis is that essentially the value of real estate, or let's just say the world economy of the U.S. was overinflated its value because people were playing fast and loose with the economy, taking huge gambits and trying to trade horribly bad loans as though they were, you know, totally
awesome.
And lots of people made an insane amount of money, most of which have never had to pay it back. And that money was, you know, it came from somewhere. It didn't just magically appear and then get deposited to someone's bank account. It cost us, I forget how much it cost the world economy, something like $1 trillion that it cost us, in a global economy worth $50 trillion. So that's something to consider, where you just have one crisis that cost 1/50th of the world economy, and all of that money went somewhere. And it didn't go to your pockets, okay? It went to increase the disparity between the rich and the poor. And this is something that he was just trying to point out. And I don't think that Sam probably at the time appreciated the fact that this really is the biggest dividing factor right now. Like, you could say it's religion, but religion's always been divisive. Right now, there are pretty much two sides of the economic issue. You have people who believe that it's time for America to become a lot more, I'd say, socialist, like closer to what Europe is doing, saying, well, we have healthcare and we need to nationalize healthcare because it's costing just as much, if not more, to not have it nationalized. So they're like, we got to do that. And there's another segment that's like, we want to do exactly the opposite. We believe that the free market solves everything and that increased rules are actually the problem. And we want smaller government, we want less taxation, and they've essentially, the people on that side, who unsurprisingly are conservatives, have convinced, in my opinion, the vast majority of poor people that are very religious or very poor, have convinced them to work against their own interests. I mean, we saw with healthcare, where people who were Medicaid beneficiaries showing up in their wheelchairs paid for by the government saying that they didn't want socialism. I'm like, why don't you give back your fucking wheelchair? We could start today. But the truth of this insanity is it's only possible because they've really tacked on, in my opinion, to this whole American dream thing, right? person should, you know, should be should make the money that they make and be entitled to it in its entirety, and that's it. You know, like anything else is tantamount to communism or socialism, and there's really no desire to see any involvement whatsoever of the government. Now, I am of the attitude that I'm not a huge fan of government, actually. I'll tell you this. I'm not. I do consider myself somewhat in a libertarian sort of sense, but only in the fact that I believe that you should still pay taxes. I just think that people should be able to invest their taxes more locally. Like, you can do this, actually. This is an option that people can have. Like, you can go and donate money to local charities and get about 80% tax rebate from that. So it means you pay 20% more tax, sure. But you know that where the tax money is fucking going. If it was up to me, it'd be 100 fucking percent. Like, I would just... I want my money to go where I can fucking see it. But that's just me. That's an extreme version of that. I still believe that you should tax people. And I do agree with Sam Harris's main point, saying, like, how rich is too rich? That was his article. He was saying that anyone making above $5 million should be taxed 90%. And that made him lose more fans than anything else he's ever done. So many people unsubscribed, were writing horrible messages saying, like, you're a scumbag and shit like that. It's amazing. And this is a man who's written a book saying that religion sucks and that faith is no good. And he gets more flack saying that the rich should be taxed.
Well, he made a couple mistakes. Number one, he put a number on a figure. He basically put a specific out there saying, here's what I would do. And near the end, he did that, you know, if you make more than this, you should be taxed this much. And immediately people are going to flip out because, hey, let's admit it. I would be pretty pissed off if my money went to that broken piece of shit that is the U.S. government right now. Anyway.
Well, someone's going to. He needs money from somewhere.
In Canada, I don't care so much because if I fall over, if my bladder explodes because I didn't pee, because I held it too long to increase my pleasures, then the Canadian government will fix it, and then I can sit on my ass and collect, like, basically unemployment checks while I heal. They'll take care of me. But in America, what safety net? Fuck them. Anyways, the other mistake that he made was at the end he tacked on some weird, well, how about all the billionaires put a bunch of money towards an infrastructure system? And I'm like, look, you were better when you were talking in generalities. He's trying to fit this into his overall moral framework where he's saying, look, less suffering is good, betterment for everybody is good. What we're trying to do is, like, what is our goal for the future? What do we see in the next 100 years for the human race? Is capitalism the top? Is the quest for more wealth the most useful pursuit that humankind can go for? Or are we going to move towards a third reference Star Trek universe where everybody takes care of everybody? Because what was it? Carissa was mentioning yesterday something about the world now has the capacity
to feed the world,
to feed everybody.
Yeah,
of course, that's in theory. In practice, who knows if the fuck it would work? But you know,
and people are working on trying to make that happen. That's the honest truth.
And it's interesting to think about the concept. One of the things that he was mentioning in his article is what happens when a technology comes along that basically unemploys, like, half the country. Because it's going to fucking happen. As soon as you have robots that could do thinking man's job, as soon as they don't need people sitting at a desk fucking figuring out what each email means and what to do about it, or like, a computer. Like, they're already outsourcing to India, and they can't even speak English, clearly. So as soon as a computer is able to fucking help you, there goes that sector. It's going to take... artificial intelligence, or even the beginning of it, is going to wipe out so much work. So what's going to happen at that point? Are you just going to have a world where everybody is unemployed and poor and miserable while there's a couple uber-rich people? Or is everybody just going to live in a utopia where everybody has enough? And that kind of seemed to me kind of where he was saying, we got to make some decisions here, because otherwise there's going to be guys out there who are trillionaires. And then there's going to be, well, look at the inequality. What were they saying? The top 1% in America has
27% of all the wealth.
No, it was even more than that. It was like the top 1% has more than the bottom 40. It's something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's quite it is ridiculous. I don't know the exact number, but it's quite nuts. And I think here's the crazy thing too. I mean, I hate bringing that up because I feel like I'm using this to explain absolutely everything. But The riots that were happening in London, I feel like they're just a bit of a taste of a kind of dissatisfaction that's happening from a generation that's been sold a bill of goods and has come to realize that it's a lie. Now, it wouldn't be so bad if we lived still in a feudal system where no one had any aspirations to do anything, that they knew that they would be surfs their entire fucking existence, and that was it. And there was never any fucking question of, like, sure, a surf. Duh, what else am I going to do? Unfortunately, we live in... We kind of made everyone believe that they could be doctors and all these other kind of fucking things, when obviously, no, not everyone can, okay? Many of you are idiots out there. Not any of the fans of our show, of course.
You're all geniuses. Special geniuses. Snowflakes that will succeed in everything that you try.
Everything.
So long as you're reasonable.
Yeah, please be reasonable. But the one thing that I think the rich understood long ago, which is I don't think something that the rich today fully appreciate, is that even kings were quite afraid of their own people. That's why people in the Middle Ages had more vacation time than the average North American. In fact, three times the vacation days. The average peasant had between 40 to 80 days off of the whole entire year. Yeah, it sounds crazy, huh? When we thought, oh, those medieval people lived shitty lives. Well, actually, not as shitty as some.
It's like, yeah, cubicle boy. They had...
They had so bad. Mr. fucking endlessly responding to emails that have no purpose. Yeah, their life was shitty. But anyways, my point is, the rich people then, they knew that they needed to keep people happy, because if they didn't, they were very, very outnumbered, and these peasants weren't exactly the kind of people that just mess around, right? When they get pissed. Regime changes were known to happen. Kings could lose their heads. So there's this fundamental appreciation of saying, okay, well, I need to make sure that I'm not fucking over everyone too badly. Like, everyone's got enough. And I think the one thing that Sam said that made a lot resonate a lot is that would the rich rather be rich in a third world country or in a first world country? Because being rich in a first world country might mean that you can make less, fewer billions, I suppose, and still be able to contribute to the infrastructure that you live in.
Is necessary to sell more. Like, this is what kind of worries me about everything, is that, you know, up until a while ago, I subscribed to the ignorant notion that, oh, everything in America will always be fine because they're always going to want to sell stuff to us. But now I'm kind of realizing there are other people in the world that they will just... you were talking about Argentina and how basically they just pulled all the money out of Argentina and went somewhere else.
That's what they did. Argentina's economy collapsed when the rich, who were neocons, decided, let's get the fuck out of here. There was some kind of, like, financial meltdown, so everybody, all the rich people took their money out, and no one had any money. It was fucking insane. Like, the banks had no money. They all took it out and flew it out of the country. It's fucked up. You don't think so? There could be horrible robberies like that. Like, that would be insane.
Just complete collapses of financial markets and everything else like that. It's a little bit scary. I mean, we've already gone through that first recession. It looks like we're kind of sliding into that double dip.
Don't remind me. It makes everything that we do seem all the more insane and unaccomplishable. It's like, can we do this?
And the big question is, as things get worse, do we band together or do we drive each other apart? Like, what are these Republican presidential guys? Apparently, is down for the idea of basically, if you're in debt, being sent off to basically debtor's prison.
Is this Rick Perry?
I'm not sure who it was.
Oh, man. Well, let's I want to segue into the third topic conversation we have, which is the Seven Mountain Dominism. All right, now, you might have heard about it if you go on Right Wing Watch, because this is pretty much one of the only places where you can really find out more about it. Because it's kind of hidden in plain sight. I don't know if you remember, a couple of years back, I was talking about this ministry called Morning Star Ministries. They were a really kind of sophisticated little operation. They charged like $20 a month for membership. They're like an online ministry.
$20 a month for membership?
I know.
Man,
month. I know, we feel like idiots. $20 a year. Pfft, morons that we are. They're raking it in, boy. And these guys developed something called the Oak Initiative. And it's not a new type of document, because the idea of dominion theology, which is essentially the Christians who believe that they should dominate all parts of culture in the world in order to institute a kind of theocracy. There's different variations on what that theocracy is supposed to be like. Some Christians think it's more like there's still a separation, but preachers pretty much control everything except for making laws. But even the lawmakers are beholden to the Bible. You know, it's just that kind of crazy, nutty shit where they even want to include economics in there, where you wouldn't be allowed to lend money. There would be no social programs. They would What were some of the things that they did? Anyways, it doesn't matter. They have their own specific agenda. Much of it is similar to what you've already seen the religious right or the conservative right push for. Less government, more laissez-faire capitalism, because they really do believe that, well, a lot of them believe that making money is a really fucking fantastic idea. And in fact, that's how you get to dominate all these areas of culture. Now, the specifics of this Oak Initiative is essentially the creation of a Christian intelligence service. Now, I know that the name sounds kind of...
Nazi-ish?
Like, no, well, I was going to say like an oxymoron.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But essentially, the Christian Intelligence Service, if you want, is not like the FBI. They're more like the Ministry of Truth in 1984. So they declare that the media is unfairly biased, so that it is the job of Christian Intelligence Service members to gather information and to put a Christian slant on it. So that's the Ministry of Truth, in a sense. And what else they say is that they need to dominate seven parts of our culture. That's in business, government, media, arts and entertainment, education, family, and religion. So they want to infiltrate all the areas of these and essentially kind of do a bit of a, well, maybe less violent version of Night of the Long Knives, you know, when the fucking Nazis took over. It's like, hey, guess what? There's a whole bunch of us in here, and now we're going to stab all of you to death that doesn't agree with what we say.
Yeah.
So... here's what I'm surprised, first of all. I was surprised it wasn't an Ape Mountain. Because do you notice what's missing in this? The military. Do they consider that government, though?
It might. You know what? I think if you included in some kind of plan...
they might
that
come
you
after
wanted you to infiltrate the military, then that's where you get into trouble.
They've already pretty much infiltrated the military anyways. I think
sure.
They would probably lump that up into government. Right?
Yeah, it's true.
Why make the distinction? You're like, government is the military.
Why make that pesky, scary distinction to freak everybody
right
out?
And it doesn't matter anyways. I mean, the army is beholden to what the government says it should do, so
seriously?
Why does it matter? It's just a tool that they point in a direction and say, kill that, please. Now, some of the people behind this, there's some two interesting guys that I want to talk about, and they're very hard dudes to actually find out any information of, except for what these guys say about themselves. The first guy is a dude by the name of Lance Wallnau, and he's kind of the poster boy right now for this Seven Mountain thing. He even has an online university called 7M University, where he offers, like, these courses. Okay. I'm trying to explain to you what... have you ever seen these motivational speakers? Okay? They're just sort of like... they have a whiteboard and then they draw shit on that whiteboard and
sure.
They'll tell you how to change your life through whatever system they have?
Yeah.
This is what this guy is, all right? He's what I call a motivational pastor. So the combination of an evangelical pastor and a motivational speaker is a motivational pastor. So they talk. Him and this other guy called Jim Garlow, who is also another version of this. They're pretty much motivational speakers that have decided to transition over to the religious movement. And their package is this whole teaching people how to infiltrate these seven areas of culture and to dominate them. Now, there is some good news about this, because it does sound scary the way that I describe it. But I do want to tell you that one thing, although Lance is an extremely talented orator, trust me, when you're watching his stuff, he sounds convincing. He sounds like a really good motivational speaker. But that's a good thing, too, because most motivational speakers don't amount to shit. They don't make people do anything. When has Tony Robbins actually really successfully changed someone's life?
Well, I think Pamela Anderson said he saved her career. That's enough for me.
It wasn't her gigantic tits or anything that saved her career, though, right? Had nothing to do with it?
I don't
know. Or maybe the porn movie she made?
I don't know.
No. Well. Anyways. No, it was obviously a motivational speaker. But also his university course, which costs about $539 for a yearly subscription, by the way, is what he describes a master's program condensed to 15 minutes a week for one whole year, and you too can have a master's in what he called destiny degree. You can have a destinies and master's degree, because that's what he has. He's a doctor of destiny. And if you think that's expensive, keep in mind that his seminars, because he pretty much goes around giving these seminars and charging people almost $1,000 to attend. So his you know, $539 package. Wow, sounds like a great deal. He has a money-back guarantee, by the way, which has some kind of weird fee, cancellation fee for online courses. Yeah. Registration. It's a great scam. I want to do a money-back guarantee where I'm like, yeah, I gave you 60% of your money back. That's how the money-back guarantee works. You get money back, just not all of it. That's
guaranteed.
Yep, you get some money back, guaranteed. So the reason why this Lance guy's actually been up and coming is he started getting promoted by this Jim Garlo guy, who's a pretty famous pastor who runs the Skyline Church or something like that. I forget what it is. Anyways, he was at the Response, you know, Rick Perry's Pray the Dead Away thing?
Yeah.
So he's got lots of friends in high places. So essentially the idea is he's used his political connection to help this Lance guy with his whole religious scam, fucking sell people on this whole idea. I like the fact that they are scammers, number one, because I know that their courses will be valueless, which is the good news. I even read some of their documents where they're explaining and outlining their plan. It seems like it was written by a 14-year-old, okay? It's not exactly the most enlightening shit. And it sounds so full of like this motivational speaker bullshit. You know what I mean? We need to get motivated to do this. You're like, that doesn't do anything.
Synergize your motivations to yield
positive results.
Positive increases in your...
Yeah. So anyways, these two dudes are kind of the modern day version of it, including this other guy called Dave Barton, who's like this really famous evangelical preacher who's been pushing this pretty hard, and he's even more influential. Like, he holds sway over like a couple hundred thousand evangelicals, and they have voting power. And the whole point of this dominism theology, and it's just a very overt it's like the same thing that's happening with the Fellowship or the Family. Remember that book by Jeff Charlotte talking about, you know, people who have taken positions in government and who swear fealty to a religious order, an unofficial religious order. I mean, you should be scared of that. This is unconstitutional. They're not allowed to do that. Like, their first duty should be to the government. They don't. They shouldn't be responding to some invisible entity. And especially when that entity wants to put Jesus Christ in power. What the fuck does that mean? That's some scary shit.
Yeah, it's... A lot of the comparisons on that right-wing Media Watch site is like, it's going to be just like the Taliban all over again. Probably not that crazy, but, I mean, we see how it's kind of getting pushed.
Well, they admire the Taliban, actually. There's a lot of things about the Taliban they admire. Number one, they admire that homosexuality is punishable by death, which they'd love to see bring back. Same with adultery. So there's a few things we're like, wow, we admire the way they've been able to control their citizens with their religion. Trust me, it's like hate respect, okay? And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, how many freedoms do you think you would have in a theocracy? Like, how different would a Christian theocracy where they focused strongly on the Bible? And remember, this thing can be interpreted any fucking way you want, right?
You can kiss this podcast goodbye, obviously. The other podcast, just because it's filthy. The website probably would be toned down, if not completely destroyed.
I'm pretty sure it would be destroyed. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Man, it's interesting how all of the goals of these kinds of groups it sounds so much like fascism.
Well, there is a strong fascist element. I mean, a lot of people, it's so funny that they ignore the role of Catholicism in fascist Germany, right? But you can see it in the Reichskonkordat, which is essentially a treaty that Germany signed with the Vatican saying, we'll make, you know, your religion the official religion, and in exchange, you're going to help us. And they did. They helped give them names of, you know, hundreds of thousands of Jews. Many of the churches turned them over when they came over to seek sanctuary and be like, here's a Jew, take him away now. Their complicit involvement in the Third Reich is scary, and it's something that most people just kind of forget. You know, like the fact that the SS slogan was God with us, but Hitler was an atheist, apparently. And his whole regime, an atheistic hellhole. No, not really. I mean, when the state and religion fuse, there's not much difference between, you know, certain theocracies and fascist states. They share a lot of commonalities. That's why lots of people get messy and they're like, Islamo-fascism! You know, they'll mix the two because they have a lot of commonalities. Yeah. Not all the commonalities, but many of those elements. And a lot of it has to do with submission to a person of authority. That's it. That's really a strong component of both fascism and theocracy. And it's one that is we should be really afraid of. Like, that's the reason why fascism is so horrible, is that individual expression, opposition, these things are not allowed. And that's how you know your society is a piece of shit.
And it's interesting. One of the videos that I watched about these Seven Mountain guys, he was basically saying the government, this is another reason why, you know, small government ties so well into what these guys want to do, because their opinion is the government has spread out too far. It's interfering in businesses. It's interfering in, like, its sphere of influence includes businesses. It includes school. It includes culture, like what you morally aren't allowed to do, which are supposed to be spheres that religion has. They want to take that back. They say separation of church and state. No, we want to take these things back away from the state and put them back into the sphere of religion. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, that is a Taliban-like control over everything. Not something you want happen. I mean, imagine already the state of science education in America is at an all-time low. But imagine with these clowns in fucking power. I mean, they've already, many of these people have probably been systemically working to undermine teaching of evolution in school already. I mean, we see it all the time with stickers, with sections of books omitting the age of the universe. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, let's omit that thing. We don't want our students to know how old the universe is. Better that they think it's 6,000. I can't imagine it being very, very different from, you know, some Islamic state like Saudi Arabia if the religious people took over, if they had control over every aspect. I mean, you can forget, you know, You can forget about your freedoms, buddy.
Yeah, and these people, these religious people, always freaking out about the Muslims and their Sharia law.
Yeah.
It's coming over, and that's what they want to do. Meanwhile, trying to jam their fucking right-wing agenda down our throats. It's great.
It's coming because you're the one that's bringing it, idiot. I mean, every religious person who's not this particular brand of evangelism should be shitting their pants, because trust me, they want a specific theocracy. They don't want the rest of the other Christians. You guys are bad. All 30,000 other denominations, just as far as they're concerned, blaspheming, wrong, and shit like that. They can't stand it. They want, I mean, one of the Seven Mountains is religion. That means they want complete control over all religion, okay? They don't want you to have yours. That's a problem. Your religion is not part of their mass, you know, homogeny they imagine of belief. They're like, everyone's going to believe the same thing once we get in power. Yeah, because that's never led to genocides or war or stuff like that. I'm trying to force people to believe what you believe in them. Yeah.
Sounds pleasant. I look forward to that future.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, guys like Rick Perry, they are part of that Dominist theology. So it's not as far as you think. It's not as far as you think. And concerning how strong a voting base evangelicals are, and he has them, okay? A guy like Rick Perry has the evangelicals. And if it's not him, it's fucking Michelle Bachmann, that tart, who is also part of that whole Dominist theology. Her and her fucking super gay husband in complete denial. They should be fun. They should be a fun couple. Ugh. America, please. I really will move to China if that happens. I actually would prefer those crazy bastards to the new ones you want to put up.
Maybe
Ridiculous. There's
a middle ground. We can go to Quebec, sip our wine, and go, oh, the Americans.
You know, yeah, if that happens, I'm gonna be a separatist. I'm gonna be like, fuck it, let's get out of this whole thing. Quebec, man, let's go. Separate ourselves, not from Canada, from everything else, because now I just want to give up on the world. Okay, you know what? I think that pretty much covers the show. I'd like to remind everybody, if you love the show and you want more, we do have a patronage system. It's $20 a year, and you can have our huge back catalog of shows. We're almost at 90 now, so you would have that access to that and access to it for a whole year. Now, we're going to be switching things up in a couple of weeks. We're going to be introducing the idea of seasons and stuff like that. It's not going to fundamentally change how it rolls. It'll actually make it easier for everyone to understand when content's going to be up, when
and
it's
be
not
able
be up.
To dig through all of the old shows to find the topics that you're interested
exactly,
in.
Exactly, exactly. I realized that I've really poorly organized the content, because we really have produced a lot. I mean, when it was just a few dozen shows, it didn't matter. But when you're over 240 shows, You know, it's pretty hard to fucking browse that shit. So we're going to try to make it easier for you guys. That's going to be coming up. And if you want to help us do that faster, you can also become a hardcore member. Now, we will be offering cool things with the hardcore membership in the future. The announcements haven't quite been made about what that is because we're still working on it. But those really do help us even more than the regular memberships. So we encourage you guys to help out there too. And if not, if that's not good enough, then just sign up for a freebie membership. You get a couple extra bonus shows, and the entire time we try to shove our product down your throat. That's the price. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.